unless I'm reading this wrong and read it wrong in the intro, you're a legit doctor, Catherine, right? Like, you're a doctor. You got your PhD, correct?
I'm completing my PhD right now.
Damn. So what do you call an almost doctor?
PhD candidate.
Ah, there we go.
Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
All right. Happy day. It's good to see you. Welcome to the FASD Success Show. I am thy host, Jeff Noble. Thank you so much for being here. You know, this is the podcast about creating success in caregivers, creating success in frontline workers, creating success in individuals with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. How do we do that? We talk to some awesome people, man. We talk to people who are doing so good in the community, and then we learn from them. And the best way I know is to learn from conversations. So I'd like to have one with you now. How are you? How are you doing? How are you holding up? You know, there's an undercurrent of anxiety going on right now. People are weeks deep into homeschooling, and some is going great, some is not going so great. I say just do what works for you and do what, you know, saves your sanity. If you need somewhere to be right now, let me tell you, before we get started, where you need to be in the free workshop. It is workshop week. I told you I'm already pumped about it, but what I didn't anticipate is when we dropped the first video, just the outpouring of support and love and just the feedback was fantastic. It was amazing. And so this happens for a week, so you can get there. You can get there by going to fasdsuccess.com/CKS workshop. Register. It's free, man. It's free. You know, we will be moving into our full Caregiver Kickstart coaching program, but that's not until next week. We just dropped lesson number two. We have lesson number three. We also have a secret, super secret session that we are doing. We have a Facebook group that is rocking and people are talking and building connections. You don't have to do this alone anymore. If you are listening to this and you're alone and you feel like you're doing this alone, register, because all of a sudden you're going to join our Facebook group, and there's people everywhere and they are in the same boat as you, and people are excited and they're learning and they're getting people on board, because that's what we need to do, is get people on our team, man. And that's what I do. I teach people like how to get a team, how to build a nice team, a care team. That's what one of our case studies, Julie Huntington, said. I just put her in the second video, and she was able to build a care team. This is all about limiting meltdowns at home. This is all about building connection with not only individuals on the spectrum, but with your other neurotypical kids as well. This is about getting your spouse on board, because let's be honest, you know, where are you going to be in a year from now? Where are you going to be? Are you going to be in this same situation, and or you just come check out the free workshop and see what it's all about? If you don't want to go past that, that's totally up to you, but you might, and you probably will, and it changes lives, and it just might change yours, and what have you got to lose? And come listen to other people who have had a positive experience with this. Come see for yourself. Like, the videos are just straight up teaching. That's what I'm doing. I am teaching. I'm leaving it all out on the table. And I do that a little bit selfishly, so that when we do open the full coaching program, you know, I could confidently say, listen, the information that I've given you for the free workshop is amazing, and I have no doubt I could charge a lot of money for it, and people are going to ask me, like, just like they do every time, can I buy these videos off you? And we don't do that because we put all of our eggs and energy into the new group moving forward. But that's not until next week, so come join, because there's hours of excellent content and community. That's all I'm going to say about that. FASDsuccess.com/CKS workshop. Be there, or be square, or who knows where you'll be. Like, you know, I'm jovial and I provide levity, but there are stakes here. There are real life repercussions. And we know now what to do in order to give you the very best chance for your success, your family success, your kids, your clients, your students' success. And that's why this show is called the FASD Success Show. And I'm bringing on a success today, our interview today with Catherine Windsor. She is the executive director for FASD Newfoundland. She is also a parent to three individuals on the spectrum, and also she is getting her PhD, right? As you heard right off the top, she is getting her PhD. So Catherine is awesome, and she's going to give you some great tips, some great insight. So much so, in fact, that like I am now using one of her phrases in my regular lexicon. Like I will say Catherine Windsor from the executive director of FASDNL, Newfoundland and Labrador, said something awesome. So make sure you listen to that. So I just want to get to the interview right away, and I want to talk about what she said on the other end. So as we say, let's get to the interview. Are you ready? I'm ready. So let's go.
Hey, folks. You know when somebody's awesome? I'll tell you when. Somebody's awesome when they paint their car red for Red Shoes Rocks. You know who this person is? I just told you earlier, but it's Catherine. Catherine, all the way from Newfoundland. I love the East Coast. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Oh, buddy. I wouldn't have it any other way. So I got a lot to get to, but let's start off with the car, okay? What, like, is that your car? And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, in our show notes, fasdsuccess.com/podcast, you'll see it. You will have a picture. So tell me, like, the origin of the car.
Well, it is my car, and it actually is red. So there wasn't too much work that had to go into making it look like a little red shoe. Just some paint and a little creativity. It was actually my husband's idea, so we're going to have to give credit where credit is due.
Yep.
We just took out all the tempera paint. It's washable, so it was no pressure, and we got a little creative with it, and as a family, painted it to look like a little red shoe.
And washable, right? So this is not a permanent thing.
Right.
You're like, no, you wouldn't.
Oh, it could be done every year. That's what we've said. Now we can never get rid of the car.
Did the car have a name? You know, because I was thinking like Wayne's World, you know, and they had the Garfmobile. And it kind of reminded me a little bit. I got those kind of vibes.
Yeah, well, when you called it the Red Shoe-mobile on Twitter, I thought that was pretty creative. So,
hey, I'm the ideas guy.
Yeah, we might go with that.
Okay, well, then it's sold. There we go, the Red Shoe-mobile, folks. All right, but I think it's awesome. What a great statement. What was happening in the street? Like, did it garner attention? What were you hoping for? What did it do? What was the feedback?
Well, I mean, overall, the feedback was positive. It definitely got a few looks, but no different than having, your business logo on the side of your car or something similar. I think I always joke that we can put the puzzle piece for autism on the back of our bumpers, but nobody does it for FASD, right? Like, meaning there's a lot of stigma still there. So people tend to not be quite so open. And I thought, well, heck, let's just do the whole car. Like, why not?
Yeah, man, I think that's fantastic. But, okay, I started with the car, but, you know, in those movies where they start at the end and they work their way back, let's do this, right? Because, so you got your master's, I know that for a fact.
Yes.
And you're a PhD candidate, and you're doing it in research, but you're also the executive director of FASDNL, stands for Newfoundland and Labrador, I'm going to assume, or no Labrador?
Absolutely, Newfoundland and Labrador. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. So Newfoundland and Labrador, you're also a caregiver, right? I like to lead off with that, man, because you are in the trenches. You have children who are on the spectrum. Please tell me, who do you got at home?
Yeah, I have three kids at home, all on the spectrum, and they are currently 12, 13, and 17. And have been, well, that's how I came to be part of FASD work, was through the assessment and then diagnosis process for them many years ago. And sort of the physician who diagnosed them said, you're going to need to learn as much about FASD as you possibly can, because you're going to need to advocate for them for the rest of your life. And I took him very literally, and here we are.
So not only, you know, have you become an advocate, now you're getting your doctorate in, because your research is in FASD, right?
Yeah, my master's research was around individuals with FASD who are involved in the justice system. And in my PhD research is around women and substance use and how they mother while in prison. And yeah.
Ooh, lots of topics. Okay. Mm-hmm. But bring it back then, because you said the subsequent, like, a diagnosis and assessment got you involved in it, but you were involved way before. You just didn't know what it was. Like, bring me, you know, a little bit further back here when we started to notice or figure out what was going on.
Yeah. So it was our middle child that prompted an initial assessment or questioning of it. And we were really, really naive. We thought that the middle child would be the only one that would need an assessment. Like, it never sort of dawned on us that they'd want to see the sibling group. And then they said, well, we need to see your other kids. And then all of a sudden it was like all of these questions and things that didn't quite add up, or like it didn't quite fit ADHD, or something that just wasn't quite a right fit before. It answered a lot of questions. But that also brought a lot of, you know, time to process that. And like, what does that mean? And what does the future hold? And, well, you know, we don't know that anyway. So
how did you do it? Three kids? How many years before they, you know, you knew what was going on? What, different therapies, different diagnoses?
Well, at the time we were in, so we were in Newfoundland. At the time there was no diagnostic clinic for our area. And actually there still isn't for the Eastern area. And so it was really on the shoulders of the parents or caregivers to put together an ad hoc team, if you will. We had to get many, many, many referrals to many specialists that we had to see the need and request the referral for. There was nobody to sort of be that person or be that team manager. And it meant a lot of time and energy and resources went into all of that process. And then obviously a lot of appointments. And, you know, it really was a wake-up call for me that, you know, okay, I was capable of doing that, but found it exhausting. And how were other people managing? And that's when I realized there was a huge need to sort of respond to that in some formal ways.
So then you do a deep dive. I'm probably saying that lightly, right? And you're learning about the brain and all the necessary things that go with it. And does things start turning around at home? Like, you got a little bit of the answer, make some adjustments. And that then prompted, oh my gosh, I got to tell everybody. Because that was me. That was like mine. I was just wondering, was that sort of similar?
Yeah, it helped us in knowing where to look for resources, especially around parenting and stuff in the home. And then also what I like to call preventative parenting, which I would say is a huge part of how we parent kids with FASD, which is like kind of seeing the risk before it happens, so you can kind of put a plan in place rather than waiting for something bad to happen. And it's tricky, right? Because you want to also give the individual time to live up to their potential. It's this constant measuring of, are they there yet? Is this too risky? Is this too much? But knowing there was a diagnosis of FASD allowed us to sort of throw some things out the window, like the, you're 12, so you should be able to do this, or this is a weird rule. Why are we still doing this at this age? And just saying, this is the way it is. Like,
this is the way it needs to be in order to help your kids function.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, it's all about increasing their functioning and allowing them to have better days. And managing these massive emotions, which some don't have the tools to be able to process, comprehend, and giving them that time to grow. Because they will, because just like in a right environment, it's amazing what can happen. Not without its struggles and its challenges, but the odds are better. You talked about working in justice. I guess I don't even need to guess about the understanding of FASD in the justice system in Newfoundland? Is it what I suspect, slim to nil? Or are you going to surprise me and say, no, no, folks, no?
There's a growing awareness the past few years. I will say that. There's an identified need to become more educated within the justice profession, I think. And certainly that's a task in itself, then trying to meet that need and give them the information and tools that they can use with their clientele that's useful for them. But, you know, we're on our way. Yeah.
It's because of the work you're doing, because you guys are all over the place with FASDNL. I was taking a gander at your, hey, no pun intended.
See, nobody who has, the rest of the country is not going to get that joke.
You know, I've been there. There was a conference there 4 or 5 years ago, I think, maybe even more now, that I attended.
You were there. Yeah.
I was there. Were you there?
No, that was, I think, the same month that we were still getting diagnoses and assessments. So not yet.
The hills, man, from the bottom to the top to my hotel. I didn't think I was going to make it.
No.
I contemplated calling a cab.
I hope you didn't have a bike.
No. Are you kidding me? That I don't know how people do that. And then in the winter.
Yeah.
It's you don't know what I'm talking about. Folks, Google St. John's, Newfoundland, and just Google where their harbor is, and then Google good luck getting up the hill. You know, and all the houses are like almost this way. Anyways, it's a great time. It really is. But it also is consequential, I think. You know what I noticed? Like on Thursday at 7 p.m., you thought it was midnight on a Saturday. It was hopping, right? Is this just a stereotype, or is there a culture of drinking in Newfoundland?
Yeah, I would broaden that actually to say there's a culture of drinking in Atlantic Canada. Okay. Certainly within Newfoundland and Labrador. The idea of the kitchen party, that social gatherings revolve around alcohol. It's very common to be questioned why you're not drinking alcohol at a social gathering. You know, I think that we often talk about the drinking in urban areas because that's what we see. We see George Street, we see the lights, the restaurants, but really we know there's higher rates of drinking in a lot of rural areas as well. So again, it can go back to that visible, invisible thing.
Is part of your mandate to focus on prevention, intervention? Where is the focus, or both?
Yeah, so we focus on prevention, resources and supports, education and training, and also facilitating conversations around increasing the diagnostic capacity, like to be able to have teams that are focusing on the island portion of the province, because currently that's a gap. That's sort of, yeah, what we do.
What are the conversations like? Because I'm assuming you're out there having them, right, with people. And what are some of the, is it no way, Jose? Do you catch an ear? Is it just blown off?
About the diagnostic teams or about
about the prevention conversation when you're out in the community?
Generally, I would say it's been really well received. And it seems to give people a lot of food for thought when they realize the many ways that FASD can happen. And they kind of, you can see them, the myths that they'd previously been exposed to kind of falling away. But, you know, one of the biggest things I think in helping our work is educating folks about how common FASD really is. And I always say, you know, we all know and love people with FASD. We might not know they have FASD. Maybe they don't know they have FASD, but based on 4% prevalence, we all know and love someone with FASD.
That's very well. And I'm just, give me a second as I steal this. We all know and love. No, I'm not joking.
Go for it.
That's good. But that is good. We all know and love someone with FASD. Guys, write that down. That was just a zinger to use in your presentations, but we'll quote FASDNL, right? Catherine, executive director once said, we all know and love someone with FASD. They might not know it. You might not know it. Beauty, buddy. That's really good. And tell me more then about, because not only do you do justice, not only are you doing this, and I know I'm going back and forth, but the questions are just popping in my head, because when you're having this conversation about prevalence, you know the numbers in Newfoundland, right? What is it for prevalence at 4%?
Yeah, at about 4%, it's over 20,000 people. Newfoundland Labrador, it's important to realize as well, has a very small population compared to other provinces. It's roughly just over 500,000 people.
Yeah.
Between Newfoundland and Labrador. So so you don't have the same density of population across any of the regions, really.
But we're not conspiracy theorists, but we know 4% is probably a bit loose as well, right?
Yeah, and Newfoundland and Labrador has the highest rates of binge drinking amongst Canadian provinces and territories as well. So that's also quite, you know, it raises our questions even more about the prevalence and how that would impact pregnancies, especially if a woman didn't know she was pregnant yet, and that in those early weeks or month. Yeah.
Again, jumping around. So COVID, you did do support groups, had to jump online. How are those working out?
Really well. Because of the way that Newfoundland and Labrador is laid out, because there's such a geographic span of the province, we had moved virtually a long time ago because we knew we didn't have the ability to have the in-person groups for across the province. It just wasn't possible. And when you have people living in really remote rural areas, the only way sometimes to offer them support is to do so virtually when it's very, very specific to something such as FASD. So it's doing well. Lots of families that join in to our groups. And we've also had a huge uptake in interest in virtual training.
Oh, I just know a guy who's doing some soon. Me. Just kidding. You I see the posters for it. You're awesome. And folks, if are listening out in Newfoundland and Labrador, we'll definitely put that in the show notes so people could get that. Are you running the workshops? Are you running the parent support groups? Is that all you, man?
So I do a lot of the training. I do that. But we have actually two co-facilitators who run our group. And they're really, really fantastic and have been doing both support groups and FASD support groups for families for many years. So we're really, you know, better for having their expertise as well.
Let's give them a shout out. First names, what are they?
Maureen and Jessica.
Maureen and Jessica, you keep doing God's work, man. Good job. Now, you got three kids on the spectrum. You're doing all of this stuff and you're a PhD candidate. Oh gosh, you're making me feel lazy. How are you still alive? Like how are you managing? How are you taking care of yourself?
Well, I don't know parenting any other way. If that, you know, I don't know what it means to parent a non-FASD kid.
Right. Person.
So it's sort of built into how I function. And other than that, I would just say time management, organization, and do what you can when you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if sometimes it just calls to starfish on the living room floor because you're exhausted, you do that?
That, no. Maybe some deep breaths. I think also we wait for the perfect time to do things and
go into that.
Yeah. And maybe another way of thinking of it is I have a 20-minute chunk. What can I get done in that chunk? Because there's no perfect time to write and there's no perfect time to do any of the work that we do. So, finding that good enough time, those little chunks of time add up. And by the end of the week, you'll go, wow, look at all the things I did in the little chunks. If I'd waited for the perfect time, maybe I wouldn't have done any of that.
Do you teach that principle to your children?
Oh yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's the little efforts, right? It's that consistency that makes such a big difference.
Are they homeschooling right now, like virtual schooling?
Yeah, two of them are.
How are you doing it?
Pretty well. Flexibility, making a plan. I will say that. I give them a plan of the week of when the chunks of schooling will be. Keeping in mind, always reminding, there's flexibility there. You know, we talk about bum in your seat learning versus hands-on learning, that even though something doesn't look like traditional learning, we try to identify, what did you just learn in those situations, or things that we did. And I think they're starting to see the benefits of that.
I'm going to assume this, and you correct me if I'm wrong. Sounds like your husband and yourself are on the same page.
Yeah.
How do you do, like, any tips or tricks? Like, I know you say I don't know any way, so I'm just trying to ask you questions to maybe give some insight. I want people to listen to this and say, I never thought of that.
Yeah, like, good point. Okay, so a lot of juggling, right? A lot of trading back and forth. Okay. And trying to support one another's professional goals and work, so that we both feel fulfilled outside of parenting. Because the parenting, let's face it, any parenting can take a lot out of you certain days.
Certain all day. You're being so reserved right now. It can be an S show sometimes. Like, let's be honest, a tornado, you know? That's what it feels like sometimes.
Yeah. You know, when my kids were young, and I used to joke that when I said goodnight to them, there was this spot on the door frame from when I would, like, just sort of lean my head forward while they asked their, like, last 5-minute requests or comments or questions. Yeah. As I was trying to close the bedroom door after saying goodnight. And I'd just be leaning there like, oh God, is today over yet? But
since you are a caregiver and you're doing your PhD, it's not a dissertation. Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, score 1-4, Jeffy boys. Listen, I got to play something in the background. That's the smartest I'm going to sound all week. Excellent. So with your dissertation, say it again what it was so I don't mess that up because I'm on a roll.
My actual project?
Yeah, with the substance abuse, right?
So I'm looking at how mothers that are in prison or were in prison try to maintain that mothering or navigate that mothering identity and practice. And I'm really looking at that overlap between the number of women that are in custody that are mothers and the number of women who have substance or identified substance use issues. So I think there's certainly an overlap there with how substance is being used or alcohol is being used as a coping mechanism.
So what is the FASD angle on that?
So in terms of their kids, when a person is incarcerated, what happens to the child? And if the children are become part of the child welfare system, then they may have that assessment of FASD or they may not. And how that impacts a woman's ability to maintain access to a child, either through the child being identified as having FASD or the mother being open about the substance use struggles. If it's sort of raising any red flags and impacting how they can either reunite or not after incarceration.
What is your hope, the project, like what's going to come out of that?
Well, I'm focusing on work that's being, or, you know, women that are incarcerated in the Atlantic provinces. And that seems to be where I focus a lot of my work is there's some unique features about Atlantic Canada, both related to my research, but then also related to FASD. And I think it's really important to give organizations and service providers and criminalized women information that matters to them, that is reflecting what's happening for their experiences on the ground. And, you know, hopefully is useful to them in some way.
Yeah, that's amazing. Are you drawn to, you know, women of this you know, going through this, dealing with this, like in order to pick that as your dissertation, like where you had a strong enough values or inclination to do that? Because I'm sure you didn't pick the topic out of a hat, or unless I just, you know, broke a news story.
No, I mean, I think the overlapping themes in my research is that intersection or overlapping between justice and health, and how things can be criminalized or made to be criminal through our like misunderstanding or interpretation of people's symptoms and behaviors. And, you know, I think that it's just sort of a different side of the coin between what I looked at in my master's, which was around social supports for people who are justice involved with FASD, and looking at how, you know, women are able to either not commit further crime, and how their children or substance use might play a role in impacting that.
About the prospect of the woman themselves being on the spectrum?
And that's certainly a possibility. Yeah. And of course, I mean, it might come out that that's in fact the case. It'll be interesting to see. I'm at the point now where I'm preparing to do interviews this winter, and the service providers that work with them, to see what their understanding of FASD is, because it might be that the service providers don't necessarily realize that the women themselves might be impacted as well.
I'm smelling future podcast. You come on when that's all done and you find out and you can tell us what's going on.
That's right. We could do like preliminary findings.
Ooh, that's what I'm talking about. And then we'll add firework noises. That's what I need. I need that. I just need it. With FASD Newfoundland, where are we going with this? Where do we see this? Is this a long-term venture? Are you locked in, or, you know, are you the halfway person? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been with FASDNL now since 2015. Haven't gone anywhere else yet. I'm really implicated in the work in a lot of ways. And I feel that the fact that I came to it after encountering FASD in my personal life, gives me a different sense of urgency for pursuing this work and wanting things to be better for other people, and for wanting professionals to be more aware and more, educated, around FASD, because we certainly had a number of experiences that indicated that that wasn't the case.
When I know you're not saying everything you want to say, and that's awesome. I appreciate that. But when you have these experiences, it just makes you mad and you're like, I'm going to do something about this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, and I think it's like we don't recognize all the time that parents and caregivers can be the experts of both their kid and like how the kid's condition affects that kid. You know, it doesn't mean you're the expert about how it affects everybody else's kid, but your own certainly. I mean, we were certainly told a lot of either inaccurate or stigmatizing information. It just heightened my awareness of the fact that, you know, you don't know what you're talking about.
So you have three kids on the spectrum. List each one's biggest strength that you're like, you're a rock star at this.
Okay. Someone asked me this before too in an interview, and it was
scratch that question.
No, it's a good one. It's a good one. And I think my answers were different, but it was at a different point in time. Okay, for the
forget about that interview. Let's talk about right
this
now.
This is the only interview that matters.
Yeah, there's no other podcast on the planet. or media medium. This is it.
This is it. We've arrived. Okay. I would say the youngest, is a curiosity to always learn new things. Like, it doesn't matter if it's like the new garlic press in the kitchen. She wants to know, like, how does that work? Why did you choose that tool? Where did you get it? How much was it? Da, 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 da. Constant curiosity is definitely a big, big help. Middle child, I would say, is resilience and with a hard working ethic. Yeah, like, we'll sit down and plow through the work. She's one of those kids that you're kind of like, hey, maybe you should take a little break.
Yeah, like, can't shut it off. Just going.
You're a really hard worker. So that's always a good strength to have. And the oldest, I would say, like, the ability to learn about a new topic and then really, like, make it his own. And try to learn as much about that as possible. So right now it's calligraphy.
That's cool. I just always fascinated. Everybody has a different area of interest and strength. And they're lucky that, you know, they've got you. I'll tell you that much. I think the province is lucky, Catherine, that they have you. Last couple of questions. What would you say to Catherine, before she knew about FASD, what would you say to her now that you look back?
Oh, take it day by day. Don't let the worst case scenarios or the possibilities of how things can go off the track drag you down now. Because that's one thing. When I first became aware of FASD, a lot of the information that I was getting, it's a lot better now, but a lot of the information that I was getting was still like very fatalistic and like, mm-hmm. people are permanently like damaged and broken. And it was just, it felt icky and it felt mm-hmm. hopeless. And it was almost like we'd been naive to think that our kids were pretty great. And we were waiting for things to just go horribly wrong. And they didn't. It was just like, well, maybe next year they'll go horribly wrong. And then they didn't. That's not to say there haven't been bumps in the road and times where you have to really advocate or wonder, when do you advocate and when do you step back? But in terms of things just being like the dumpster fire that we thought they would be, that didn't happen. And I would say that's huge. Find the people who have been successful and figure out what helped make them successful. I learn a lot from adults who live with FASD and talk openly about how they manage and like their strategies for managing day-to-day life. I think there's a lot of wisdom there. And I would say to my pre-Catherine self, stick with the winners, like in terms of find the success, find the good, and follow that.
That's amazing. That's great. And I agree with you. Other people's story doesn't have to be your kid's story. It all doesn't have to be a cautionary tale. People do well. There's a lot of people in the world that do well on the spectrum. And there are people who, we know so much now. Like, we know, we have a long way to go, but compared to 10, 15, even, you know, 20 years ago, the research, like, folks like CanFASD are just rocking and rolling. And I firmly believe, I tell them at CanFASD all the time, that researchers are rock stars. You guys are behind the work, you know, doing the work to get the information to make guys like me look good. I say studies have shown.
That's why we're doing it all.
Yeah, right. But that's the, you know, so I want to bridge that gap and feature folks like yourself who are, you know, the executive director, a parent, getting their PhD. That's a lot of work. And I'm glad you're on our team. I could tell you that much.
Oh, I'm glad too. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Last thing, what is the last show on Netflix you binged?
Oh, it's pretty niche. Okay. Really? I'm really fascinated with Orthodox Judaism. And so the last show I watched is from, it's an Israeli show called Shtisel, and it's Hebrew, but it has subtitles, and it has an amazing, amazing script and plot. It's really good, really multidimensional characters.
Check it out, folks. This is how you find out about people. You ask some questions I never would have known. Where can folks listening to this follow you, see what you guys are up to, maybe even get in contact with you if they are in Newfoundland and Labrador?
Yeah, so we have our website, fasdnl.ca, that they can visit. We have a contact us link there. And on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, we are at fasdnl.
Oh, Catherine, thank you. It was last minute too, so I really appreciate that. Thanks for being on the show. Did I do okay? Are you going to come back?
Oh, definitely. As long as there's fireworks.
Yeah, I'm going to do the fireworks.
Or you can add a little horn beeping, like from the red shoemobile. Like, Catherine's here.
Beep, beep. Okay, okay. Again, man, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, man, so awesome. Thank you, Catherine, so much for joining me. You're going to be a juggernaut. You could just tell, smart as a whip, doing a lot of good things, excellent caregiver, really pushing the FASD agenda forward where she is in Newfoundland and Labrador. And if we're ever allowed to travel again, you have to go there. It is amazing. It is beautiful. And the people are just as awesome. So thanks for joining me. Now, I want to touch base with you guys on what a few things she said. First thing, she talked about stigma right out of the hop. And I think it's really important when she talked about the bumper sticker. You'll have the puzzle piece, you know, and we're in Canada. I watch hockey. And a lot of the pundits will have the little puzzle piece. But you don't see very many red shoes on the bumper, on the lapel. And I think that is also because of just lack of education. You know, that's our job as well. Just the general knowledge isn't there. So we need boots on the ground. We need people doing the work, doing the trainings, either in person or virtually, whatever it takes to get, hopefully one day we'll get some pins on our nationally televised broadcast and we'll get a lot more bumper stickers. But she is absolutely right about the... She's right about the stigma. I liked how she talked about preventative parenting, right? Get out in front of it instead of having to react to when something happens. I think that's beautiful. She also mentioned a great point about how she has to constantly measure. Are they there yet? Is it too risky? Is it too much? These are the questions that caregivers are constantly asking themselves. And you're always thinking two steps ahead. And if I say this and they do this and they... So you can't... You can't just react because reactions come with repercussions, and that's for sure. But what she did say was going through everything she went, getting a diagnosis. Having a diagnosis allows you to throw things out the window. By the way, I'm also stealing that. It also, you give her credit, of course, but it just sounds like I'm going to steal it, but I'm going to reference her. And having it, because people say, what's the point of having a diagnosis? And I will say my friend Catherine, who's the executive director at FASDNL, says that having a diagnosis allowed her to throw things out the window. For example, why aren't they acting their age? You know, why aren't they remembering things? You know, why when I tell them no, they do it over and over? Like, because it explains the behaviors due to organic brain damage. So she's talking about the primary characteristics. So when she understands this maturity, she could say, well, you know, it's not about their age, it's about their stage. So I like what she said. It allows you to throw things out the window. Oh, this is what I'm stealing. Talk about thievery, stealing with reference, right? We all know and love people with FASD. We might not know they have FASD, and they might not know they have FASD, but because of the 4% prevalence in Canada, 4% prevalence, you know and love someone with fetal alcohol. Boom. Reference her. Use her as that source, because that is hers, and that is really, really powerful, because that is the brass tacks and facts. It is 2.5 times more common and more prevalent in autism. Then you know somebody. You know it's the largest cause of developmental disabilities on the planet. Oh, I also liked what she said. She said, do what you can when you can. You know, I'm still to this day, I coach families, and, you know, I don't talk about it much, but we have something called the Caregiver Club, and that is down the road. If you ever register for our online course, that is after that, so don't even worry about that. But that is a big topic in what we're talking about. We talk about doing what you can when you can and not feeling bad about not doing it if you aren't able to do it, if you're not up for it. People are just sick of what's going on with COVID. They're sick of it. It's like a blanket because everyone expected, okay, we'd be past this by now, but it's just, it's like a nagging injury. So the goal is to be gentle with yourself to make sure you could do that. And doing things in little chunks, man, she's not lying. That's a really powerful thing to do, is do it in little chunks. And that's what I do whenever I do a big project, like the Caregiver Kickstart is right now. It is a really big project, but we just do it in chunks, little bits, and then next thing you know, it is all done. Making a plan and then keeping in mind and reminding about flexibility. That's the key word here, reminding that there is flexibility. You might personally say inside that, oh yeah, I'm super flexible, but if you don't express that to your kids, and your kids need to hear that, because I always think it's important to have them to be able to back out with dignity. If we see that we are giving them too much to do, you could get them to exit. Don't let the worst case scenarios or the possibilities of how things can go off the rails in the future drag you down now. Excellent. And hang out with others who are successful. You will learn a lot. That's just in general and in life. But I think she's also talking about hanging out with the caregivers who are doing well. How are you doing? What are you doing? That's my method. Okay, so to do a podcast, I went to somebody who does podcasts. How do you do it? How do you do it well, right? For someone to create an online course, how do you do it? And how do you do it well? People who are really versed in FASD, I went to them. How are you doing it? How are you doing it well? That's the whole point. There is no need anymore to reinvent the wheel. There's no need to be alone. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. We have the research. We have the practical know-how. We know what's going on. You do not need to live in the dark. You do not need to live in chaos. You do not need to live in fear, and you do not need to walk on eggshells. And certainly at night, you don't need to lie awake at night wondering about the future. You don't need to do that anymore. One of the ways through that is for our free workshop, fasdsuccess.com/CKS workshop, man. I'm going to plug it because I know what it can do for you. That's just straight up. It can change lives. It could change your life. And if you don't like the way your life is going, or perhaps, you know, you want to teach others, well, then come hang out with me. Join the workshop, because it's just going to get better and better and better and better. So until then, you know what I'm doing? I have a new club. It's called the End of the Show Club. A couple of weeks ago, I put out the message and saying, hey, write me if you listen to the end of the show, because if you write me, then I just put you in a book and I say, these are my favorite people book. So you can write me, jeff@fasdforever.com. I also want to give a shout out right now to Irene, Tina, Mark, Jake, Paul, Jason, Matt, Stephanie, Charlene, Suzanne, and Brenda. That's some of the people who wrote me at the end, so I really like it. I'll give you a shout out. That's what I'm going to do. You just give me your first name. You're going to get the end of the show, end of show shout out. I got to write this stuff down. I'm on fire. This is hard. You are harder. Stick with successful people. Come hang out with us. Come hang out with the community. You're listening to this because you want things to be better, and you know things could be better. Thanks again to our guest, Catherine, for being here. Super smart. What a pleasure. What an honor. Okay, until next time, same bat channel. I'm going to bring you some more awesomeness, and I can't wait for you to hear the next one, because we already got it done, and it's a doozy. So until then, have a great day. I love you. Bye.